we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. VOA intern Alex Hodge is my guest blogger this week. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to go to blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. Alex has a three-part series called African Players in the National Football League. The NFL kicks off a new season on September 6th. When the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles will host the Atlanta Falcons. In part two of his blog series, Alex writes how the Eagles and the Falcons both feature top wide receivers with ties to Nigeria and Sierra Leone. Eagles receiver Nelson Aguilar was born in Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital. And Falcons receiver Mohamed Sanu is the son of parents from Sierra Leone. In part three of the blog series, Alex will write about Ezekiel Ziggy Ansah, a 29-year-old defensive end who was born in Accra, Ghana. The Lions have designated Ziggy as a franchise player for the upcoming season. That means he'll earn a salary of $17.5 million. Now, Ziggy didn't start playing American-style football until his sophomore year at Brigham Young University in the western U.S. state of Utah. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to an interview Ziggy did with my VOA colleague, Peter Clotie. Ziggy begins by talking about his motivation to play football.
I grew up playing soccer and a little bit of basketball. I picked it up in high school. Mm-hmm. Never knew what football was, but long story short, after high school, back in Prisec, I applied to go to BYU. I wanted to play basketball for a couple years. No, that didn't work out. I switched out to do track because I did a little bit of track in high school. And, during that whole process, a couple of my friends were like, why don't you just go try for football? And I was like, I ain't doing that, you know. It's crazy. I don't know the game. I don't know the rules. Never played before.
So when did you finally decide that I'm going to embrace this, I'm going to play this?
I think from the get-go, you know, I was eager to learn the game. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to let anything take me, you know, from studying the game and knowing, you know, like the rules and everything that pertains to the game. So I would say I was really focused from the start.
How did you get to embrace the rules? Because the rules are totally different from basketball and, of course, soccer.
Way different. It's crazy. I just took it a day at a time. I had really good teammates mm-hmm. that were willing to help me, see me grow. For my coaches to put me on the roster, I think they saw some sort of potential in me. And that was what, you know, kept me going. It wasn't easy, but I just had to stay focused and keep learning.
You know, when Ghanaians see American football players put all those equipment on, they're like, what the heck is this? How did you get acquainted with it? How comfortable were you when you started using it?
I don't even know how this is going to go over my head, over my legs. Like, what the heck am I doing, you know?
Right. How challenging was it?
Learning and playing is like two different things, you know? It's like studying the theory and actually doing the practical. The book part of it wasn't too bad, you know? It was all new language to me, but I was able to pick it up pretty quick.
So let's go back to BYU, the transition from there to the pro life. How was it?
In college, it's very easy to say, you know, this guy is the best guy. Mm-hmm. But when you come to the pros, everybody's big, fast, and strong.
How stiff is the competition?
The stakes are high. The rewards are high.
You were recently in Africa with one of your mates. How did it go?
Ever since I've been in the league, I try to go back every year, you know, just to stay with the family because they're not all able to come out this way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this time around, I was able to go with my teammate. We went to the Osu Castle. I think, you know, we learned about, you know, like the slavery, where our ancestors came from. That was a pretty neat experience. I met a couple guys that were, like, so eager to learn the game. They're like, hey, what's up? I'm like, you know, stay focused. One thing I'm, like, trying to do is hold a camp, you know, out there and trying to have some of these NFL guys come help out, you know, like the coaches coming in, just to, you know, introduce the game to the country and all these young guys. Because, man, like, when I look out there, I see a lot of potentials.
Is that the reason why you were saying that the game should be taken to Africa?
Africa contributes, like, a larger part of this whole world. And I like being out there and seeing how people are so eager to learn the game. And seeing the potentials in all these young guys, I think, you know, bringing a game out there would be really good for us, for the continent as a whole. If the NFL ever says they're going to play a game in Africa, I promise you them tickets are going to be sold out in a second. Because, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that tell me, you know, I watch the game on the internet, it's like so late, but I'm going to stay up and watch you play. You know, it's just so humbling to me that, you know, all these guys are, like, willing to learn the game. Mm-hmm. You know, they're willing to know what this game is all about.
From what you've learned so far, how do you give back?
These are great fans. I love the city of Detroit. I think that they, like, give it their all to support the sporting teams that we have out here. And I know that this city is, like, dying for a champion.
Let's say in 5, 10, 15 years from now, how will Ziggy see himself? What will Ziggy see himself doing?
I think I'm a see a successful football player, you know, that strived to get what he wanted. A guy that never gave up.
That's Ghana-born Ezekiel Ziggy Ansah, defensive end for the Detroit Lions of the National Football League. And Ziggy was talking with my VOA colleague, Peter Clotie, in Detroit, Michigan. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to athletics, one of the top American sprinters, Christian Coleman, was forced to withdraw from the recent Diamond League meet in London after suffering a recurrence of hamstring trouble. The 22-year-old Coleman won a silver medal in the men's 100 meters at the World Championships in London last year. He was scheduled to race the 100 meters again in the British capital, but he pulled out while warming up for the heats. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Christian Coleman before his withdrawal. Here's Andy.
Christian Coleman is very much among the top sprinters in the world this year. He won the world indoor title in Birmingham back in March. And Christian, if you could just take an overview about sprinting, and I've just heard you use the phrase about the atmosphere between you and your rivals on that start line and elsewhere, is friendly competitive. So, I mean, how much contact do you like to have with your fellow sprinters during the competitive season and then compared to the off-season when you're all training hard?
I think this is one thing that I really like about the sport is how competitive it is and, you know, how it just, you know, goes without saying that, you know, it's race day, it's, you know, the week of competition. You know, it's just really no friends. It's really just, you know, everybody's going out there scrapping and trying to get the W. And, you know, we can talk after the race if you want, but during competition is, you know, it's just all business and everybody's going out there and competing, trying to come out with a W. I don't really, you know, have much competition with them. I mean, have much communication with them, whether it's competition day or off season. It's just, you know, I know them, you know, we're friends.
What about on the start line? Just, you know, say when you're going to the blocks, the announcer is saying, you know, getting into the blocks. Do you make any eye contact? Or are you entirely focused on your blocks and your lane?
Yeah, I'm just totally focused on me, totally focused on my lane, my blocks, just thinking in my head what I need to do to, you know, come up with the win, just totally locked in on what I need to do. So you don't look around, you don't pay attention to anybody else. You got to stay within yourself and focus.
People are asking you about what is the perfect race for you, but sometimes is that too much pressure? I mean, do you ever go into a 100, say, thinking, I've got to run the perfect race, or can that be a burden? I mean, we're all human, even top sprinters.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't look at it as pressure. I think you go into every race just you want to come out with the win, and so that's just how I look at it. Every single time I step on the line, I'm trying to go out there and get a win, and not necessarily worry about the time, just worry about that later. And so I don't think I'll ever have a perfect race. I don't think anybody's ever had one, and so it's just always things that you can work on, but you just try to go out there and do the best that you can, and just try to work on the, you know, and do the things that you've done in practice and put it out there in the competition and just hope for the best.
And lastly, it's been a great year for you, obviously. A year ago, you took a world championship silver in the 100. You won the world indoors. That was also in Britain, in Birmingham. What is ultimately your potential? I mean, obviously, not just in medals, but in terms of time. How fast do you think you can run, especially in the 100?
I mean, I don't know. I've said plenty of times, you know, I don't have to put a limit on myself. I just try to like to go out there and compete and, you know, just make sure that I'm fully prepared to run fast every single time and just put myself in the best position to come out with the win. And I think that when you're prepared to win, when you're prepared for the big races and the big moment, and, you know, that just elevates everybody's abilities, you know, you get to big races, and that's where special moments happen. And so I just got to make sure that I'm prepared for that moment, and not necessarily worry about any type of time or anything like that. But I think I have as much talent as anybody, and I think I have the work ethic to put me over the top. And I'm looking forward to seeing what I can do in the future.
Well, we look forward to plenty more bigger moments from you, Christian Coleman. All the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thank you, energetic Andy Edwards, for that interview with American sprinter Christian Coleman in London. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now with some English Premier League football news is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Some Premier League clubs have begun their preseason tours across the United States, including reigning champions Manchester City. Man City were the runaway winners last season and have won a total of 3 Premier League titles. Last season, they broke numerous records, including most goals, most points, and most wins. Man City midfielder Bernardo Silva spoke at a news conference ahead of his International Champions Cup match against Liverpool in New York, and he said he hopes his team will do even better this year.
Yeah, it's a goal for us. We want to do better. We want to try and do better than last season. We know it's a different competition than the Premier League, because the Premier League, you have to be regular. You have to play a lot of games. Even if you have a bad game, you can recover from it. In the Champions League, you have to be focused 100% every game, and if you make mistakes, you might be out. So yeah, we'll try to do better. We'll work on it, and hopefully, we'll give our fans some happiness on that area.
Also on Wednesday, Manchester United will play their match against Milan in California. United have not hit their stride on the tour so far, but manager Jose Mourinho told reporters in Los Angeles that could change when his top World Cup players rejoin the squad.
I'm happy with the matches, the evolution of the matches, but I don't have the players to work. I don't have the majority of the players that are going to be in the squad on the 9th of August, when the market closes and we can make the squad official for the season. So, of course, I'm not happy. Of course, I'm not happy to have just a few players
This month, United will also face Liverpool and Real Madrid in the United States before traveling to Germany on August 5th to take on Bayern Munich in their final match of the preseason. And in one of seven new signings ahead of the new season, West Ham United has appointed new manager Manuel Pellegrini. In 2014, Pellegrini won the Premier League and FA Cup in his first season in charge of Manchester City. This week, Pellegrini made his first media appearance as West Ham's new manager, and he says he believes he was appointed due to his offensive style of football.
Well, I worked here 3 years in England, so I'm not perfect. What is West Ham? I had the option to play in Bowling Ground, and the atmosphere at that stadium was always unbelievable. I know that West Ham is the fans of West Ham. Always liked attractive football, offensive football, so maybe it was one of the reasons why the owner tried to bring me here to play, to manage the team.
Also, newly signed midfielder Jack Wilshere signed a 3-year deal with West Ham, ending his 17-year association with Arsenal. Pellegrini praised Wilshere for his experience on a winning team and his quality of play, and Wilshere said he could not turn down an opportunity to work with Pellegrini.
One of the main reasons I came here, you know, with a manager like Manuel, who's won the Premier League and, you know, managed top clubs across Europe. Once he was appointed, it was obvious the way the owners wanted the club to move forward, and I wanted to be part of that.
West Ham will play their match against Aston Villa in England on Wednesday. The 2018-2019 Premier League season officially kicks off on August 10th. And that's all from me. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Colombian cyclist Nairo Quintana won Wednesday's Stage 17 of the Tour de France, while British rider Geraint Thomas extended his overall lead to almost 2 minutes. The 28-year-old Quintana took control during the final 16 kilometers in the Pyrenees Mountains and was a comfortable winner. Now, at just 65 kilometers overall, Stage 17 was the shortest tour stage this century, but it featured three quad-burning Category 1 climbs. "I'm getting tired just reading about those climbs." Quintana's winning time was 2 hours, 21 minutes, and 27 seconds. Irish cyclist Dan Martin was second, 28 seconds behind Quintana. The Colombian Quintana is fifth overall in the general classification standings, 3 minutes and 30 seconds behind Geraint Thomas of Team Sky. Dutch rider Tom Dumoulin of Team Sunweb is 1 minute and 59 seconds behind Thomas. And four-time Tour de France champion Chris Froome of Britain and Team Sky is in third place overall, 2 minutes and 31 seconds behind his teammate Thomas. The 2018 Tour de France has four more stages and will end on Sunday in Paris. Joining us now with more football news is reporter Prince Nesta. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Well, you mentioned yesterday about the FIFA Men's Player Award star-studded shortlist that includes Cristiano Ronaldo, Luka Modric, Lionel Messi, and Antoine Griezmann. There's stiff competition on the women's side too. 6 of the 10 women in contention to win the Women's 2018 Best Player Award play for French and European champions Lyon. The 6 include France captain Wendy Renard, German's captain Jennifer Marozan, Japan's captain Saki Kumagai, England's Lucy Bronze, Norwegian's Ada Hegerberg, and France's Amandine Henry. Others include U.S. international Megan Rapinoe, 5-time FIFA winner Marta of Brazil, and Australian forward Sam Kerr.
Prince, let's stay with the ladies. What about the best coach award in women's football? Who's on the short list?
There are about four women and six men competing for the best coaches in the women football category. Nominees include 2017 winner Sarina Wiegman, who coaches the Netherlands, and Asako Takakura, who coaches Japan and also helped them claim the Women's Asian Cup title. The male candidates in this particular category also include Renald Pedros, who led Lyon to a Women's Champions League and French League double, and Brazil's Vada, whose team won the Copa America Feminina. In other news, Mesut Ozil's departure from Germany's national team amid accusations of racism continues to draw mixed reactions. Ozil, who trained with Arsenal in Singapore on Wednesday, received support from Arsenal boss Unai Emery, who said that Ozil had nothing but respect from his teammates and he would do everything possible to make sure the midfielder feels at home. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan also threw his weight behind the 29-year-old, saying, and I quote, "The racist attitude shown towards the player was unacceptable." However, Bayern Munich president Uli Hoeneß slammed Ozil's decision, not only terming it as weak, but also noting that the 29-year-old has been playing dart and hasn't added anything to the German team for years.
Wow, some strong words there, Prince.
Here are some views from Arsenal Singaporean fans on the matter.
The decision is very good because racism is not supposed to be in the football. It's such a shame. We should respect everybody.
Well, I think he made the good choice. I think he knows what he wants. So I think that, well, what we know is the whole Arsenal community is behind him and we hope for all the best in this season.
On to some football transfer news. Premier League newcomers Wolves have signed Portugal midfielder João Moutinho from Monaco for $5 million on a two-year deal. The 31-year-old is Portugal's third most capped player behind Cristiano Ronaldo and Luis Figo and helped them win the Euro Cup in 2016.
Prince, what does Moutinho bring to the squad?
I think he brings in experience since he started his career at Sporting Lisbon before joining Porto in 2010 and has also enjoyed successful three-season spell at Porto. He helped them win the Primeira Liga in 2011, 2012 and 2013, as well as 2011, he actually won the Europa Liga and also the Portuguese Cup and also helped Portugal win the 2016 Euro Cup. And he also brings in ball dribbling abilities, ball passing accuracies, and he's also a very skilled midfielder. And his shots are superb, and basically he's going to be a good addition to the Wolves side who just got into the English Premier League. And of course, they need experience in that particular squad. Brazilian winger Malcolm also passed his medical at Barcelona ahead of his $47 million move from Bordeaux. The deal was announced after the Spanish champion beat Roma to the signature of the 21-year-old. That's it, Sonny.
Thanks, Prince. Reporter Prince Nesta. But before I let you go, Prince, we heard from VOA's Gwen Uden earlier in the show about Man City and Man United playing here in the USA. Does that excite you, or is it still a money grab by those Manchester clubs?
I think it excites me on one side, and the other side, I don't think it excites me because I support Arsenal myself.
Okay.
And I would have loved if Arsenal would have come to the United States. I know right now they're in Singapore, and they're going to be playing PSG in a tournament this Saturday. But looking at it from the Manchester City fans' point of view and the Manchester United point of view, I think it's a really great thing, all right, for them to come here and at least, you know, because they have fans here in the United States. And how beautiful is it for fans here in the United States to get to see all these players they always see on TV and stuff like that. But I would have loved if Arsenal would have also joined in and, you know, come for this particular visit.
Thanks, Prince. Reporter Prince Nesta. And that wraps up the July 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to the pride of Sierra Leone, Sule Terawali, our VOA engineer this evening. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Zimbabwe's most vulnerable children will be getting some additional help from the United States. On July 16th, the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, announced the launch of Pathways, a five-year, $35 million program that will offer services to 250,000 HIV-affected orphans and vulnerable children, 59,500 households, and 15,000 vulnerable youth. Operating in nine districts in Zimbabwe with a high HIV burden, Pathways will put communities on a road to self-reliance by building capacity in local institutions. These will then be able to provide a comprehensive set of services that improve the health, nutrition, and psychosocial well-being of HIV-affected and infected children. Funded by the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, through USAID, Pathways will be implemented by Catholic Relief Services in collaboration with key stakeholders, including the Ministry of Labor and Social Welfare, the Ministry of Health and Child Care, the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education, Child Protection Services, and others. Although much progress has been made in the past decade, HIV remains one of the top health threats facing the people of Zimbabwe. Since 2000, over 1.2 million adults have died from AIDS, leaving 16% of Zimbabwean children without one or both of their parents. The United States, through PEPFAR, supports life-saving treatment for nearly 1 million Zimbabweans living with HIV. For more than 30 years, the American people, through USAID, have contributed over $3 billion in assistance to Zimbabwe. Current projects include initiatives to increase food security, support economic resilience, improve health systems and services, and promote democratic governance. The United States is proud to work with public and private sector partners in Zimbabwe to better protect the health and well-being of Zimbabwe's vulnerable children.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.